Hey folks, Jeff here. Today, sitting on a stormy Boulder afternoon, you may hear a little bit of thunder, but it's a great environment to sit with my dear old integral brother, Ross Hostetter. Hi, Ross.
Hi, Jeff.
Good to have you here.
It's really nice to be here.
Yeah.
As it has been every time I've walked through your door.
Yeah. Well, Ross and I have done a lot together, including most recently founding Boulder Integral here in Boulder, which has morphed into the Integral Center, and yes, there's a lot going on here. And what I wanted to talk to you about today, Ross, is the work you're doing, actually, to move the ball in the integral world space around your book, Secrets of the Field, The Journey to a New World Soul,
right,
which is such a beautiful book, and it's a spiritual adventure story, and won the 2013 National Indie Award for Visionary Fiction, which, so congratulations on that.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, so what's cool is that you have this beautiful book about this young man who goes out in a hero's journey, basically.
That's right.
And you're also working with people on this as a coach and as a, you're developing what you're calling the fieldwork school, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that and what you're bringing to the to the field.
So our topic today is really about the visionary imagination, and I want to get to that. But within the context of the work of the fieldwork school, the visionary imagination really sits as one quarter of the work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think it will make a profound contribution to the integral world space, at least I hope that it will. Mm-hmm. But just to see the four elements of it, first is, of course, the community. Mm-hmm. And as you and I have been working on together for so many years, we know that seeing and being seen is the lover's engine.
Yeah.
And that nothing can really come into existence until it is seen,
yes,
until it is appreciated, until it's really seen in its fullness and its beauty. And that's a great gift that we can give to one another, especially when we're working so hard to create things that have never been created before. It's not so important if you're just making a new toothbrush to do that, but if you're really changing and cutting a new groove in consciousness and culture, it's extremely important to be held, to be seen at least by one person, hopefully by somebody else that gets you. And you and I, and you especially, have worked very hard on that, and I really want to...
Yeah, well, I totally agree. It's essential. And this is just basic, one of the basic aspects of integral theory is this lower left quadrant. It's the irreducible dimension of reality.
Right.
That we have to have some interior space with other people, or we're just not, you know, basically manifesting.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And just to give you a little bit of the context for the book in the lower left quadrant, this book was written primarily at Boulder Integral in the building that you own, in the little office there in the corner, it was a project of the Integral Incubator. It was the project that I brought to the incubator, that I worked on at the incubator, and have brought now to a degree of fruition in the world. And so I want to hold it up as one of our success stories.
Yes. Well,
at least it got out there.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of work to do that. And it was part of the creative field that you created. And I want to just thank you and offer you a deep appreciation and gratitude.
Well, thank you, Ross.
For that, because you did create that field. And I tried to write it in McKinney, Texas, and just couldn't do it. The antibodies.
Well, that's the whole point.
The antibodies there were just too great, and there was nobody there to receive it.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
And so the lower left, the community, is a really important thing.
Yeah.
The second piece is state practice, which Ken emphasizes so much and has brought forward through the Eastern practices that have come in, our ability to choose how we occur and how we pay our, what we place our attention on, and what we're doing with our attention is exceptionally important to any sort of a integral life.
Right. And the realization is at some point is that you actually do have a lot of control over your attention. And as you practice becoming aware of yourself from a more of an observer place, you know, you get pretty good at it.
You do. You do, and yeah. You can get from third person to fourth person, maybe to fifth person.
Yes.
We could talk about what that is,
yeah.
But yeah, certainly in the integral scene, the what's being called the fourth person perspective, the ability to see yourself in the context of a situation and see yourself acting and interacting
right.
from one level above.
Yes.
Just to get to that point is an amazing
yes.
level of freedom.
It is. And into a new realm. I mean,
yes.
I hate to jump the gun
yes.
here,
yes.
but
it is a new realm. So that
yeah.
that is part of the inhabiting of a new realm. And of course, there's points of perspectives above that where you can witness your consciousness itself and what it is creating and moving.
Yeah,
a fifth person perspective, but that's maybe the conversation for another day.
Yeah,
because we're talking about that. But states are really important. Just
yes,
to bring so communities
enough.
One, states are number two, and then I think a developmental practice where you one is trying something new, where you're trying something new, where you're putting yourself out there in my lexicon. If you are at an integral or a leading edge world space, which we oftentimes claim that we are, that is to do your utmost and bring all of your energy into something which is yet unknown.
Yeah. That's unavoidable when you're being creative.
Exactly.
That's the nature of creativity.
It's the nature of creativity.
Something that wasn't there before is
right.
being brought and birthed into the world.
And
moment by moment.
Exactly, moment by moment. And so it's a faith walk
yeah.
to be able to do
right.
that. And it's damn scary to do it. And there's a lot of good reasons not to do it. And yet there's a number of us, probably a bunch of us that are listening to this show, that know that we have to do it.
Yeah.
We really don't have a lot
exactly.
of choice. And then the fourth realm, which is our discussion that we're talking about today, is a realm of visionary imagination and a realm of creativity. I want to bring that forward as something that has been not really brought forward as fully as I think it could be in the integral space, even though, for example, the work of Alex Gray is a work of visionary imagination. There's artists like Stuart Davis in our space, and Ken has the symbol of the integral level as the centaur half man, half beast, or half man, half horse,
yes.
which is a mythological, imaginary figure.
Right.
But the imaginal realm is actually a realm of consciousness. It's a realm of creativity.
Wow.
And in my view, in order to really bring something into the world, there's a process. And that process begins with this initial impulse, a dream, a vision, a voice, a calling, an impulse to evolve. Sometimes it's forgotten. It comes back again. It comes back again in other forms that are beguiling you. That little red truck out in the garage that you need to go and learn to love, and the office that you need to inhabit, and the relationship that you need to be in, the city that you need to be in, the group of people. It begins to beguile you. And when you take action, begin to move on it, the next step is to engage the visionary imagination, which is imagining a present sense, a powerful present sense of what could be possible, oftentimes brought forth with emotion. There's going mm-hmm. to be a vision or a scene that mm-hmm. brings forth, you know, a deep emotional resonance.
Mm-hmm.
And that combination of that vision logic that we mm-hmm. talk about, that vision logic coupled with a deep emotion, is fuel for the evolutionary journey. It's a little yolk sac,
mm-hmm.
and it's got some energy to live on its own for a little while, not forever, but to live a little while, to oftentimes enough for us to take the first initial step into a journey of risk and trust and transformation,
mm-hmm.
oftentimes which will be a decoy
mm-hmm.
or a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really matter, you know, as long as the step is taken. And then from there, there's a process of making that impulse progressively more real, which involves seeing and being seen,
mm-hmm.
to getting into a value sphere of people that value the same thing, finally getting into a system or process where that becomes more and more real, and you're working out, knitting all those little stitches together, stitching, like the Wright brothers stitching all those little stitches on the wings of the aircraft, and getting everything just perfect and that depth detail. And you know somebody's doing their work when they're really willing to get into that nitty-gritty and make things happen. Mm-hmm. And then there's something that begins to emerge that has to survive the antibodies of the world, your interior and exterior.
Yes.
And once you do that, you're up to bat.
Wow.
And have something there. But an essential part of that step is the visionary imagination.
Yeah.
And I want to make a case for that today.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're, in terms of actualizing this and, you know, bringing clarity to this idea for my own life.
Right.
Is this something, so I see that every moment is unfolding into a new moment.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so there's some new novelty that's being injected.
The emergent novelty, yes.
Yeah, and so that's already an energetic force in the field itself, the field of life. This is emergence. Uh-huh. This is the Big Bang. It's still happening.
Yep.
You know, so I want to use that force. Because at some point, one becomes conscious of that force. This is one of the markers of integral consciousness, is we become aware of the vertical dimension of evolution, of the updraft of being. And that awareness itself calls forth that we want to then co-create. We want to work with this energy because we realize that our intention, it's like, I love what you wrote in the back of your book, it's from your book, and that is when you're talking about the field.
Mm-hmm.
One sign that you're on the right path is that you will encounter help unlooked for. The field is something that is behind us, in front of us, through us, enveloping us. Beautiful, Ross. All things without exception. I love this part. Your intention bends the gravity contours of the field, creating a path from all dimensions of the cosmos to your door. So, this visionary imagination is this step of the game here.
It's a step of the game.
Where we realize we've got this updraft, and we also have intention.
Yes.
And we have the power to shift the contours of the field through our intention, and this is where visionary imagination comes
in. Exactly. It shifts.
Probably.
It literally shifts the contours of the field, just like we now are realizing that gravity warps space-time, that's a real thing. That
damn right.
And that that all the objects are just following the web of space-time. We can shift this field by our intentions.
Yeah.
And stories shift the field.
Yeah. Well, and you're talking about that you have to sort of have an intense present moment vision,
right,
basically,
exactly,
of what you want or what's next or what you're bringing in or manifesting,
right,
and then you want to have a deep emotional, juicy, you know, experience of it too. So, are you talking about this as a practice or as an event or, you know, an adventure like your hero went on, or I mean, probably all of the above in a certain way.
Well, I think that it is both a practice and an event and a journey. Just to talk about it in its naturally occurring form, which is as an event. Almost in every life, there's going to be some sort of a call, some sort of a call to some mm-hmm. crazy thing, you know, that you want to do. I can remember really strongly, I was on the early Integral Life site, Integral Naked, and there was a picture of the Integral Life staff at a bowling alley. And I had this sense of, I need to be there. I need to be in that crazy bowling alley with these nutcase people figuring, you know, just doing what they're doing. And there was a sense that this is it. I need to move there and to begin to follow that. It was a number of years before I was able to actually implement that move. But there's that sense. I had that same really strong sense around the story that became Secrets of the Field, and a deep beguiling download that happened at a point in life when my best friend, he and I were trying to be screenwriters, and we're trying to live a creative life, and we were not making it, and we were not doing particularly well, not only on the external planes, but internal either, and we were breaking up and fighting about money, which was a very demeaning thing for some people of our high intention and all that sort of thing. And a download came to me that ended up in the book that was just I could read it if you wanted me to.
Sure.
It was a call. It was said. So I was sitting in this conference room. We're in the middle of this this bad breakup. Didn't really. know where we're going next. It all kind of looked bleak. Everything looked like I was going back into the lawyer world and all that world, which at that point in time was litigation and cigarettes and whiskey arguing on the telephone every day and that sort of thing. And this little quote just appeared as a bit of writing on a pad. It said, "There is a beauty in the wilderness which you may come to find, or which rather finds you, because it's beyond your power to will it into existence. It's the beauty of the blood and bone and what lies beneath the blood and bone and beneath the dust that the blood and bone are made of. It's a beauty which is beneath and above and through everything which is inside of you and everything outside which joins them as part of the same thing. It's already here. The wilderness will put the horn of this beauty in your belly in a way, in such a way that the beauty will never leave you. Trust."
Hmm.
So that's a call from the imaginal realm.
Yes.
From her, you know, mm-hmm. which in my case was this deeply feminine presence, a deeply feminine muse, my anima, mm-hmm. that was calling me to do something way outside of my mm-hmm. my way of living. I mean, way outside. That this is a comet
mm-hmm.
coming in through the solar system.
So I think, you know, what I'm getting from listening to you is that these are there.
Uh-huh.
We want to notice them and pay attention to them.
Yes. Yes. And so...
And it's easy to sort of poo-poo them or something, right?
Right. It is, because they're just... They're a seed. I think that they're the way that a different realm is calling you and say, yeah. Are you ready? This is just a little invitation, just the little sweetest little thing.
Yeah.
I'm inviting you to your death. Yeah, yeah. Would you like to come on along? Yeah. You know, coming along for the ride.
Well, the death of the small self.
Yeah, death of the small self.
And the birth of the larger self. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I do think that they happen naturally. That was
Think back on some piece of advice somebody gave me that has been very helpful to me right. over my life, and that is, when you're thinking about something, and I'm talking very practically, should I take this job? Should I move to this city? Right. Should I marry her? Whatever. Just think about it and note, does it quicken your heart?
Right.
Or does it deaden or numb
right.
your heart?
Right.
And it's actually not that hard to discern.
It is not that hard to discern. There's something about that little passage as an example of that phenomenon where everything in your body just says yes,
yeah.
in a quiet way.
Yeah.
It contravenes your current circumstances oftentimes, but everything in your body just says yes. Like yeah. I can relax into this. There's a repose and there's a trust.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, that's wonderful. Yeah. So that's a marker
right.
for what we're looking for here
exactly.
in terms of our imaginal
yes,
creativity.
Yes, exactly. Our own imaginal, naturally occurring creativity.
Yeah. Which is notice happen. That it's, you know, it's, and I love it. Ken talked about this at the conference, at the What Next conference, is mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about whether or not you're creative. You're a human being.
Right.
You're creative.
Exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
Enough said.
Yes, exactly. and just like in any one of those other four quadrants, you know, state practice, community, or development, to choose it intentionally is yeah. is a next step in development. It makes you more accident prone for that. It builds that groove, as Ken has said, that habit, that cosmic habit, yeah. to begin to populate that groove. So the next way that the visionary imagination is built is to go out and hang out with some visionary imaginers.
Mm-hmm.
And in the West, there has been, you know, a long, long course of visionary imaginers, especially for people that are in the spiritual realm. And then they really began with the gospel writers, like the unknown person that wrote the Gospel of John, that basically used their imagination to turn this peripatetic, illiterate Jewish mystic into an incredible, cosmic figure and mystic, and that's an example of that. You lose some things about the authentic Jesus when that happens, but nonetheless, it's a work of that kind of a imagination. And then all throughout, Western history, there was Hildegard von Bingen, Hildegard of Bingen, with those lovely downloads of an incredible music and art that was so far ahead of her time. St. Teresa of Avila, St. John of the Cross, they were all visionary mystics. Later on, the German, mystics that came on, like Emanuel Swedenborg, later on William Blake was an English mystic. And then this century, Carl Jung, Rudolf Steiner, these cats were digging deep into those realms. Mm-hmm. And in the East, the yogis have been inhabiting that for a long time. And mm-hmm. the Tibetans, it's just shock through their religion, the imaginal realms, and what they what they're doing.
And you use realms rather specifically.
I do.
And so, and I love, I mean, I'm interested to hear the sort of theoretical context of...
Okay, well, And I could kill two birds with one stone. I think one reason why these realms have not been brought forward in Integral as strongly as they might be is because of Zen, for one, and that would be a good example. So Zen is a practice of seated meditation, of seated formal Zazen, that wants to go straight to the non-dual, straight to formless emptiness. And so... it will bypass the imaginal realm and say, "Oh no! These images that you're hearing, no! Don't pay any attention to them. We're moving on. That's just astral stuff. We're not going to go there. We're not going to, pay any attention to that, whatsoever. And indeed, we're not going to pay any attention to any kind of sensation whatsoever either. So the body's going to be left." The imaginal realm is going to be left. The mind is going to be left until we're in a state of formless emptiness. So we're going on that particular.
And how cool that we know the technology to get us directly to formless emptiness.
Right. Exactly.
Do not collect $200.
Exactly right. So I think that that's one reason, because they want the technology to go. To develop a technology to go straight there, and that has had such a large influence on both the New Age scene and the progressive spirituality, and certainly the
Integral world.
Certainly the Integral world. However, the interesting thing now is when we talk about evolutionary enlightenment, which is now seeming to have a broader and broader context within the Integral world, with the work of Andrew Cohen and also the folks out west at Evolutionary, I think he calls it Evolutionary Enlightenment.
Craig Hamilton's?
Craig and all that. The experience of enlightenment, we get to the experience of enlightenment, but it's repurposed. And it's repurposed as ground zero for guess what? Not for getting out of here, which was the purpose of the whole monastic narrative,
right.
To get out of here.
Right.
But it's to go to ground zero to get back in here.
Yeah.
To get back. And when you get back in, you're coming back down from those realms of formless emptiness through the causal realms into these imaginal realms and into the physical realm. And so the imaginal realm, just like we can have vast energies in our body and use it in incredible ways here, the imaginal realms, although they've gotten a bad rap, can also be used in incredibly powerful and creative ways, and they can be aligned.
Yes.
Those forces can be aligned. Those causal realms can be aligned. So we're basically resetting the system, and we'll begin now to work in these other realms and to align these realms so that this realm, this physical realm, gets right.
Mm-hmm.
And stories like the stories from the people that I've just talked about, like William Blake, they are very much direction pointers.
Yeah. Well, it's it's interesting even just thinking about the pristine, crystalline, unadorned beauty of Zen.
Right.
So we see that, and it's Integral, we want to really appreciate that for what it is. But seeing that also calls forth the inquiry. Okay, so what else is there?
Right.
What's the adorned path in a way?
Yes, the adorned path. Yeah.
And right. How beautiful is that? Why don't we look? And of course, Tibetan Buddhism, as you say, does it. Have it in spades.
Right.
But we all do.
Right.
I mean, we daydream whether we want to or not.
Exactly.
And to bring some intentionality to that and to bring some sense of there actually is a reality that is being created. I don't know what its ontological qualities are.
Okay, well let's
you know.
Well, let's talk about that.
Okay,
there is a realm and there is a reality that is being created. We were sitting over Steve McIntosh's house, you and I, with a guy that wrote Evolution's Arrow from Australia. John, we're going to remember his name in a second.
Yeah.
But he talked about Teilhard and the work that Teilhard de Chardin was doing as a way of putting a straw into this imaginal realm, into the new sphere. And for me, in my lexicon, the noosphere or the new sphere that surrounds is like a physical realm around the Earth, just like there's a technosphere that.
So it has a right-hand quadrant quality.
It has a right-hand quadrant quality. Yeah. And you can begin to stick your little imaginal straw in it and to begin to access it.
Uh-huh.
And the way that you access it is that writing happens, music happens, and of course you have to have the upper right dimensions. There are many, many artists that are not really artists. They just feel as artists in the upper left, but they haven't actually developed the creative power to manifest those things in the upper right. So practice is exceptionally important so that there is a relatively smooth download from the upper left into the field.
Yeah. And the field is in the right-hand quadrants.
Right.
Yeah, it's substantial. It's real. It's,
right.
It's, yeah.
John Stewart was his name.
Okay, yes, yes, I remember John. Yeah.
Yes, so there's a practice that makes real, and I think it's that just like meditation is a really important practice to make real the causal realms of consciousness. Our creative practice is essential practice to make real in these subtle realms.
Well, very good. I like that.
Right.
I like that. Yeah. I mean, it's a practice in the subtle realms.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others. I mean, we talk about the martial arts and things like that, where we're working with body energies. But to work with that with imaginal realms.
Yes, exactly.
So really different world spaces,
yes,
right?
Exactly. World spaces. And, you know, I think one of the reasons why we didn't get into it and Ken didn't get into it early on in Integral is because it sounds so woo-woo. It sounds so new age. Okay, I've got these guides and I've got these presences and I've got these energies and I've got these voices that are talking
to me. There's a reason that Tibetans keep these secrets.
Freaking nuts! You know, I'm like a nutcase. And of course, you don't want to go to a scientific conference and talk about that unless the scientist is having to have some sort of a spiritual experience or something like that. But for the artist, those are just so real. They're absolutely real. Your muse is quite real. And has an agenda.
Yeah.
Wants some things to happen.
Well, the muse is a main character in your book.
Right.
And you take her very seriously.
Yeah, I take her very seriously. What she's saying very, very seriously.
Yeah. But here I am, you know, I'm a middle-aged guy living in the suburbs, and I'm not really going to go on a canoe trip, and I'm not really going to stretch myself in some kind of put myself in real danger. Not really.
Right.
What do I do? How do I do this?
Well, I would say the number one thing is buy my book and read it.
That I've done.
Okay. And the reason for that is that that's the function of art in human culture.
Yeah.
So the actors on the stage, the characters in a drama, the characters in a movie, the characters in a book are living a life full of risk where the stakes are higher than we can live with in our normal life, or really should live with in our normal life.
Yeah.
But yet we know there are times when the human experience peaks into those stakes.
Yes.
You know, and spiritual experience is part of that.
Yeah. We've all got to die.
Yeah. God, it peaks into those. And so it's a way for us to experience it. And it isn't just a vicarious way. It's a literal way.
Well, that's the point. That's I think, really the distinction, because it's sort of we can get that, you know, we like to go to a movie and suspend disbelief and all of that sort of thing. But what you're talking about is a real place and something we take seriously. And again, just it has a different ontological status.
It does. It has an ontological status. Exactly right. It has an ontological status.
And this is what you're working with in the field school.
Yes.
And
well, it's one of the four things that we're working with. And I don't think that we should have only the visionary imagination or only that ontological realm or status as part of it. But it isn't, if we don't have it, let me tell you what happens.
Okay.
Well, if we don't have it, what we then have is we've got the physical realm with all of our fears and desires and horniness and hungers and everything like that. And then we have the causal realm that we've reached in some sort of form of meditation. But we don't have the thing that is sitting there in the middle, this imaginal realm. And we see disasters as a result of that, because folks do have high levels of realization, but they have not downloaded. They're not living the story that is able to actually embody that in physical form. So they have they're beyond the psyche, but they've got a sick psyche at the same time. Yeah. You know, a massively narcissistic or sociopathic psyche or something like that. So what the discipline of art does, or the discipline of writing or creating music or anything like that, is it forces you to ground it in this plane. And it's hard. It wants to stay up in this imaginal boop, 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 dreamy state. But when you ground it in this plane and make it more real in this plane, it becomes, how can I describe the feeling? It's like, It's like, oh, that's it. It's like that relationship, you know? It was like, wow, it was such a hot, romantic relationship. And then, oh, you again. You again. But you again can become really beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
And it can become really deep.
Well, it has a quality of real relationship.
It has the quality of real relationship that you got to work out.
So how do I do that then? I mean, is there a practice? Do I write my life story, or do I listen for my muse?
I don't think that there's a one size fits all, and I'm encouraged by the fact that there is now 50,000 books that are being written every year. So many people who have a little bit of freedom from their wants and needs and existential problems choose to begin to create. So I think any act of creativity is a good thing to do.
Yeah.
For me, there's a difference between that first cathartic thing and really getting something that is ready to live on its own and have all the slings and arrows of being out in the world. And I think you should realistically get ready for about 10,000 hours of practice.
Yeah.
And I'm at about 7,000 on the clock right now.
In terms of writing?
Yeah, in terms of writing.
Yeah.
That's not including any like email or memos or little essays or something like that. But this is like serious writing is an art form.
It's a creativity.
Which I think qualifies me as an intermediate, level writer. I'm certainly not a master yet. But getting a long book out, 400 and some odd pages. Mm-hmm.
And beautiful. I mean, really enjoyable and beautiful. Paragraph by paragraph, Ross. I mean,
Thank you, Jeff.
Many times I paused and thought, wow, Ross wrote that.
Well, I didn't really write it. I got myself out of the way so it could be written through me.
Well, there you go.
And also showed up. So that is the practice. You got to sit down, you got to show up.
Yeah.
And everyone will tell you that. Then nobody can teach you to write. The writing will teach you to write and all that. And you just got to sit down and show up and be in misery for a while. Until you get that one good sentence, and what that sentence is. I was writing the field book, which is the companion to this this book. There's excerpts from the field book all throughout, and I was just writing away, and it was crap, 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 crap. And then there's the little line came just day before yesterday. It said, "A story is a vessel that creates the vessel as it pours." A story is a vessel that creates the vessel as it pours. And so you spend 2 or 3 hours sitting around thinking about, your nasal hairs and stuff like that and bad teeth. And then all of a sudden, you get a little line like that. And so, okay. And it's clear. And then some days there it works more, and some days it doesn't.
Well, and that too is a practice of discernment, and just getting yourself out of the way so that you can see what actually sparkles and what doesn't. Again, what quickens your heart and what deadens.
Exactly.
And it's not that subtle.
Right. It's not that subtle. And then you can read the work.
We talk about the subtle realm. It turns out it's not so subtle.
It's not that subtle. It's not that. It's subtle if it just sits up there in your head. But it's not that subtle if it actually gets embodied.
Yeah, and brought into manifestation.
Right.
And writing, you know, there's a difference between thinking something and writing it. It really is.
There's
something that's just another stage of, or another, you know, octave of development.
Right.
When you put it on paper.
Right. So I don't know how long we have on this blog, but there is one practice that I want to talk about, because we talked about formal art, and I don't think that everyone is cut out to be an artist, and that's not necessarily one's path, although it is a way. But I think one form of an active imagination that everybody can use is what we're calling in the fieldwork school the practice of beneficial imagination. So I can choose to see you in your highest potential. And I can choose to act with you in your highest potential. And I can choose my language around that. And we can choose to see the situation in its highest potential in its beneficial imagination. There's a process of appreciative inquiry that took some steps in that direction. And I think that there's more steps to be taken in that direction to be able to see the world in a beneficial way. One simple process is to try to take I out of any statement and to see the world through the target instead of all through all the ego. Instead of saying, I want to kiss your lips, I could say, there are lips that want to be kissed.
Wow.
So it could be me, could be something else, and it could change in the next moment. But then there becomes a target of which a certain action might be appropriate.
Yeah.
So I would say, there's a field that wants to be created. You know, there's a field of possibility that wants to be created.
Wow.
And we're in it.
Yeah, right here and now.
Yeah.
I can feel it. Yeah. One of the things that continues to astonish me as I notice my own development is just how easy it is, in a way. I mean, I sit here and I say, okay, I want to get that Ross and I have a field between us right now, and there it is.
Right.
I feel it in all my chakras.
Right.
You know, my antenna's on. I feel like a baby kind of finding its feet in a way.
Right.
You know, I'm biting my toes and shit.
Right.
But, you know, it's there. And what fun. What a great practice. What a great endeavor.
Yes.
What a great adventure.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is a great adventure.
Yeah. Well, you're just a specialist in that, Ross. You wrote the Adventure Book of the Year.
All right.
The Book of Visionary Fiction. It's fabulous. Secrets of the Field. The Fieldwork School is coming online.
Yes, it is. It'll be
Fieldwork.
We're having an opening on September 10th at the Integral Center.
Great.
In Boulder, and I just want to invite anybody that's within the sound of these voices to come.
And they can find details on fieldworkschool.org.
Fieldworkschool.org, and we'll have that up sooner rather than later. And we'll get started on a set of practices, and we've got some really cool stuff. These nine fulcrums of turning, these nine turning points that we're going to be working with. We're going to be working with the story in terms of visionary imagination. We're going to be working with specific state practices and building a community, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, it's very inspiring. I mean, I think you really are bringing a big piece of the puzzle that the integral world can use, and really so intentionally working with this subtle realm, you know, and the community and all of it too.
Right.
But that piece is feels really fresh and exciting to me.
Yeah. And to bring our highest intention, the best we can do, our moral values and our integral values into that realm.
Yeah.
We'll do an awful lot for humankind.
Yeah. May it be so.
May it be so, Jeff.
All right. Thank you, Ross Hostetter.
All right. Grace and peace to you.
Grace and peace to you. Thanks, folks.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.